It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. The divisional round is here. The best weekend in all of football, and you have come to the right place. It is the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast, presented by betonline.ag, the online gaming website of choice for the Fantasy Feast podcast, with the best odds, fastest payouts. He is the maestro, surveyor of all he oversees at rotoworld.com, the one and only Evan Silva. Check him out on Twitter, at Evan Silva. I'm a former NFL offensive lineman that loves the fantasy game now and really enjoys Evan's in-depth breakdown. It's just unbelievable the amount of knowledge that comes out of this dude's brain. Absolutely crazy. Evan, let's start with one of two games that I will be at this weekend. By the way, did I tell you what I'm doing this weekend, Evan?
No, what are you doing?
I'm on sideline for Westwood One for Falcons-Eagles. Tony Baselli is in the booth. And then Tony and I are hopping in my car, because I live in central Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, and we're driving out to Pittsburgh because he's the Jaguars color commentator. And I'm going to do the Steelers-Jags game in the booth. He's going to do Steelers-Jags game for the Jags Network. So I'm going to do it Westwood One National. So not only am I the only Pennsylvania kid that gets to go to both the Eagles and the Steelers games, I'm driving in the car for 5 hours with Baselli, who's kind of like one of my idols. Like, he and Bruce Matthews are like my two dudes. So that'll be – I don't know if Tony really knows what he's getting himself into, but it should be fun. So anyway, the first game that I will be at, the first game that there is this weekend, Eagles-Falcons, very curious to hear what you have to say, especially on the Eagles side.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to go fast. We got a late start today, and I know you got to be somewhere in a little bit. So we're going to try to do condensed, but there will be a lot of information. Falcons defense, I think, deserves a lot of credit for the way that they finished the season. In their first 10 games, they allowed 21.1 points per game. Over their last seven, have held opponents to 16.9 points per game, including last week holding the Rams, who led the NFL in scoring at almost 30 points per game, to 13 points. And now they're facing a struggling Nick Foles. I think that the Eagles' best option in this game is going to be to go with a lot of Jay Ajayi. And the Falcons do not have, you know, a soft run defense by any means. We talked about that a lot late in the season. It worked to our advantage, even as, like, Football Outsiders rated them as a weak run defense. We were on that, and that gave us an advantage over our opponents. With that said, last week the Falcons did give up over 7 yards per carry to the Rams running backs. Jay Ajayi was 16, 14, 16 touches in his final three games, non-Week 17. The Eagles put him in bubble wrap for Week 17 and let LeGarrette Blount and Wendell Smallwood pretty much handle the load. I think that bodes well for Jay Ajayi in the playoffs. I think that he is going to be their offensive engine, especially with their quarterback struggling. I don't think that LeGarrette Blount is really an option. He had 9, 7, and 6 touches in the final three non-Week 17 games. hasn't been scoring touchdowns, doesn't catch passes. Corey Clement, his usage was all over the place in the final month of the season. I think he's going to play more snaps in this game than LeGarrette Blount. Whether the ball goes in his direction, that's been kind of tough to tell. His touch counts in the final four games were 7, 5, 3, and 1 on snap counts of 31%, 15%, 40%, and 19%. So he's a guy that they use sometime in the red zone, use sometimes on passing downs. He's mildly sneaky, mildly interesting in daily fantasy, but I think ultimately this is going to be the Jay Ajayi show. Nick Foles, really disappointing after that Giants game where he threw 4 touchdown passes, finished 23 of 49 for 202 yards, 1 touchdown and 2 interceptions in the final 5 quarters of the game, a 48.2 quarterback rating, 46.9, a completion rate, 4.1 yards per attempt. It was like his confidence just went in the gutter against the Raiders and the Cowboys, two matchups that should have been favorable for him. I don't think that he's at risk of getting pulled during the game because I just don't think that Nate Sudfeld really showed enough in those final three quarters of Week 17. But I do think that this is not a gimme matchup for Nick Foles. He's a slow twitch passer. He was timid in the pocket. He's got mediocre arm strength. He's now facing a Falcons defense that has a lot of team speed. With that said, I think that you just have to understand that Nick Foles is like a struggling player in an unideal matchup, I think, for his skill set. But there are enough edges in the passing game for Nick Foles to warrant some contrarian daily fantasy consideration. I mean, look, if they get into the red zone, he doesn't have to throw for 300 yards. He could throw for 180 yards, and if they get into the red zone and he throws three touchdown passes, he's going to be good in fantasy. Nelson Aguilar is the first pass catcher that stands out. He was the second most heavily targeted pass catcher by Nick Foles down the stretch. Zach Ertz finished first, but Nelson Aguilar runs 86% of his routes in the slot. Cooper Kupp had 8 for 69 and a touchdown against the Falcons last week. We were on Cooper Kupp squaring off with Brian Poole in the slot. Brian Poole has allowed the fourth highest passer rating among slot corners, according to Pro Football Focus. Nelson Aguilar became a higher volume player as the season progressed. He averaged fewer than 5 targets per game in weeks 1 through 11. In weeks 13 through 16, again, we're leaving out week 17 because the Eagles rested a bunch of starters in that game. Nelson Aguilar went from fewer than 5 targets per game to 9.8 targets per game. He also tied Zach Ertz for the team lead in red zone targets on the year and led the team in targets inside the 10-yard line. I would say at this point, Nelson Aguilar, I think that Zach Ertz still probably has the highest touchdown probability in the Eagles' pass catcher core. Nelson Aguilar is right there with him. Alshon Jeffrey, he's a big dude. He's 6'3", 216. He runs 84% of his routes on the outside. Robert Alford is 5'10", 188, so he's going to have a significant size advantage on him. And then Desmond Trufant has struggled lately. We talked about this a little bit last week. Obviously, we think that he is a good player. He is a plus-size corner. But he has not played particularly well lately. He got torched by Ted Ginn in Week 16. He gave up a big play to Devin Funchess in Week 17. Last week, Robert Woods did most of his damage. And Robert Woods had 9 for 142. Doing most of his damage against Desmond Trufant. The Falcons have allowed 7 touchdown catches to wide receivers in their last 5 games. Zach Ertz, I think, is the number 2 tight end play on the board in the divisional round against or behind Rob Gronkowski. Falcons were middling in terms of a tight end matchup, allowed the 16th most yards to the position. But this is a bet on volume, bet on talent play. Zach Ertz was, he was super, super productive during the regular season, finishing the regular season 3rd among tight ends in both targets and yards per game, 2nd in touchdown catches with 8. On the other side, the Eagles showed some defensive slippage late in the year, and I think that that is what you're kind of hanging your hat on if you're going to make DFS investments into the Falcons' offensive skill position players. They had the best run defense in the league, like per, based on like yards allowed over the course of 16 games. But in the final 4 non-week 17 games, they gave up 4.3 yards per carry. That's below league average. They allowed over 100 rushing yards in 3 of the final 4 weeks. we know that Devontae Freeman is going to lose touches to Tevin Coleman. Last week it was 19 touches for Devontae Freeman, 17 for Tevin Coleman. Those touch numbers were elevated by the fact that the Falcons played that game with a lead, generally had control of the game, 62% of the snaps for Devontae Freeman, 40% for Tevin Coleman. Eagles were very good at defending backs in the passing game. They allowed the ninth fewest receiving yards, despite allowing the 11th most catches to running backs. So I think that, you know, you know that Devontae Freeman is a good player. You know that the Eagles showed some run defense leakiness late in the season. You know that the Falcons are favored, which is always a good indicator for a running back. And I think that you know that Devontae Freeman is going to lead the Falcons in touches, the Falcons backfield in touches. But I think you can only really project him for 16 to 19 touches. Tevin Coleman is a price play this week. He's pretty cheap, which does make him attractive. And, of course, the fact that he got 17 touches last week, but he reached 17 touches in just three of his previous 15 games. Most of those came when Devontae Freeman was missing time. The Eagles, again, you know, they gave up 24, 35, and 29 points in weeks 13 through 15. Then in week 16, they faced a dead Raiders offense. In week 17, they rested their starters against the Cowboys, who scored 6 points against them. I think that we'll see the Eagles' pass rush come back to life after their first round bye, after getting a bunch of rest during the regular season. Philly ranked first in the NFL in quarterback hits, fourth in interceptions. This is definitely no gimme matchup for Matt Ryan. With that said, I mean, the Rams pass rush was really good throughout the season and even last week, and Matt Ryan was able to overcome it. I think that there are positive matchups for Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu in the passing game. I think that at the same time, it's still very fair to question whether Matt Ryan has a big ceiling. At this point, he has topped 300 yards in just three of his last 16 games. He did not throw for more than two touchdowns in a game all season. You're hoping that if you're using Matt Ryan, you're hoping that Julio just blows it up. Maybe Sanu catches a touchdown. Maybe Austin Hooper catches a touchdown. And that's how he would pay dividends in daily fantasy this week. The Eagles have allowed 7 touchdown catches to opposing wide receivers in their last 4 games. Julio runs 76% of his routes on the perimeter. Jalen Mills gave up 5 of those 7 touchdowns in the final month. And Ronald Darby got beat for a 57-yard touchdown by Tavares King in Week 15. I mean, I think that these are matchups that Julio Jones can win. In his last 5 playoff games, he has 85 plus yards and or a touchdown in all 5 of them. So I think it's a good matchup for Julio, and I also think he's going to go under-owned in daily fantasy this week because it's really hard. I think everybody's going to try to fit Gronk against the Titans, and I think very few people, relatively speaking, are going to play Julio. Patrick Robinson was one of the best slot corners in the NFL this year, yet the Eagles still gave up a big game in Week 13 to Doug Baldwin, 5 for 84, 5 for 118 and a touchdown to Cooper Kupp in Week 14, and then 11 for 139 and a touchdown to Sterling Shepard in Week 15. Mohamed Sanu runs 68% of his routes in the slot. We've talked about how efficient he has been in the red zone. He had another good game last week. He's got back-to-back 70-plus yard games. He's a solid play in daily fantasy this week. Austin Hooper, 8 straight games without a touchdown. Hasn't topped 50 yards since week 1. Only 4 tight ends all season reached 50 yards against the Eagles. Taylor Gabriel kind of phased out of the offense. Only played 23% of the Falcons snaps on offense last week. 0 targets. Justin Hardy, 38% last week. Only drew 1 target. I'm not trying to get sneaky with any of the complimentary pass catchers. I think it's Matt Ryan, it's both the RBs, and it's Sanu and Julio. We can move on to the next one.
The next one is Saturday night. You referenced it. It's Titans and it's Patriots, 8:15 in Foxborough.
angry Tom Brady after ESPN Seth Wickersham exposed the Patriots' tension atop the organization. I think that Tom Brady, like the Patriots always do, will look to channel their, frustration onto the Titans. And this is a Titans defense that is very vulnerable to the passing game. I think the way that you attack the Titans is with a shorter passing game, a short to intermediate passing game, and not a deep passing game. That is how offenses have had the most success against them. Tennessee has allowed over 360 yards and or multiple touchdown passes to 7 of his last 10 quarterbacks faced. Not a lot of good quarterbacks in that group. I mean, or at least guys that didn't have great seasons, Andy Dalton, Joe Flacco, Tom Savage. So now they're facing Tom Brady, who is coming off of a week of rest. Tom Brady, of course, battled an Achilles injury late in the season, was held below 300 yards in each of his final 6 games. I think he gets right here. I think he's definitely the best quarterback play on the week 19 slate. Patriots have a 30-point team total, by far highest of the divisional round. I think that the bulk of that scoring is going to come from their passing game, because the Titans are very good in run defense. They've allowed just one rushing touchdown to running backs in their last 6 games. They've held opposing running backs to 3.4 yards per carry over their last 8, only 2 rushing touchdowns in that 8-game span. I think it calls into question, though, is Deion Lewis going to be able to carry his momentum into the divisional round, especially with Rex Burkhead coming back, because their touch workloads were almost the same. There was a definite lean toward Deion Lewis, but their workloads were very similar until Rex Burkhead suffered that week 15 knee injury, and then did not play in week 16 and week 17. And we saw Deion Lewis go off on 29 and 32 touches. I don't think that we can expect that kind of a workload, and I don't think from Deion Lewis, and I don't think that that's the way that you attack the Titans anyway. It should also be noted that in the 5 games before Rex Burkhead suffered that knee injury, he was leading all the Patriots running backs in targets. He had 20 in that 5-game stretch. James White had 16. Deion Lewis only had 11. And Rex Burkhead was getting the most work at the goal line. So, look, Deion Lewis was awesome. He was the Patriots' best player on offense. I mean, Gronk was the best player on offense. But, he was right there with Gronk in that 2-game sample of week 16 and 17. Just in terms of production, Gronk didn't do anything in week 17 so that he could finish with 69 catches. But how is this backfield going to be distributed? I think it's going to be one of the keys to this slate. I'm going to mix in a bunch of these different guys. I'm even going to mix in some James White, because the Titans have been so vulnerable to running back receptions. They gave up the most receiving yards in the NFL to running backs during the regular season. I think that was a mistake that the Chiefs did not attack that vulnerability of the Titans more last week, and I think that they ultimately paid for it. Rob Gronkowski was on a vicious, vicious tear before, just kind of being put into bubble wrap in week 17 against the Jets. He had 145 yards and or a touchdown in each of his previous 4 games. You look at all the pass catchers on this slate, I think that he is the best play, better than Julio, better than Michael Thomas. He is a guy that I'm definitely going to pay up for in daily fantasy wherever I can. He's also going to be extremely high owned. And last week, look, was a great example of, you think a guy is the best play on the slate, Todd Gurley, you end up not playing him. You had a significant, significant edge on the field. I think that there could be some merit to that with Rob Gronkowski this week. There always is at least a little bit of theoretical merit to that. Chris Hogan is due back from his shoulder injury. He finished second on the Patriots in red zone targets per game behind Gronk. He still ranks second on the team in targets inside the 10-yard line, despite missing 7 weeks of the season. He drew 57% of his targets this season on slot routes, where the Titans have been most vulnerable. You want to attack the Titans in the middle of the field with short to intermediate gains. The Titans on the year allowed the fifth most touchdown catches to opposing wide receivers. So Chris Hogan comes back. He's immediately in play in a game where I think that we're going to see Tom Brady have elevated pass volume. I think that Danny Amendola is also very interesting at his price. His usage should be elevated if the Patriots attack the Titans with a pass-heavier approach, which I think that they should and that they will. Danny Amendola, over the last four games, averaged 33 routes run per game. He averaged only 26.8 routes run per game in his first 11 appearances, and he averaged more targets per game when Chris Hogan played. So it wasn't due to the fact that Chris Hogan was out necessarily. I think that they just ramped up Danny Amendola's usage. I think we're going to see him be a bigger factor in the playoffs, and this matchup sets up well for him. The matchup theoretically does not set up great for Brandon Cooks. We mentioned how this was the case last week with Tyreek Hill, however, and he had 7 catches for 87 yards. He should have had a lot more, but he dropped 3 passes. And the reason that it doesn't necessarily set up great for these speedster wide receivers is because the Titans gave up the NFL's third fewest pass plays of 20-plus yards this season. Brandon Cooks averaged almost a full fewer target per game when Chris Hogan played. Look, it's Brandon Cooks, and all he needs on a 4-game, 8-team slate is to rip one big touchdown, and he pays off. But theoretically, based on the matchup, he is one of the weaker plays in the Patriots passing game. On the other side, I loved seeing Derrick Henry run like he did last week, especially after there's a group that doesn't like Derrick Henry, and I think that they kind of used that Week 17 game against the Jaguars as like confirmation bias to reinforce their thoughts of him, without understanding how much backfield penetration the Jaguars caused against the Titans. The Titans' offensive line played much better in Week 18 against the Chiefs, and Derrick Henry was the engine of their offense. He gets a very good matchup. The thing that you worry about with Derrick Henry is, will his touches sink if the Patriots jump out to a big lead? But the matchup is very good in theory. Patriots gave up over 4.4 yards per carry to opposing running backs in their last 5 games. They gave up a third most receiving yards to the position on the year. Derrick Henry has not been used a lot in the passing game the past 2 weeks without DeMarco Murray. 4 targets. He has caught 3, however, and turned them into gains of 66 for a touchdown, 29-6. He's going to stay on. This is assuming that DeMarco Murray does not play this week, by the way. And I think that if DeMarco Murray comes back, even, he would be more of a bit player who is used in pass protection. That would be an area where Derrick Henry has struggled at times. But I think that Derrick Henry ultimately is going to play a ton of snaps in this game, regardless of DeMarco Murray's availability. Mike Mularkey already came out and named him the starter for the divisional round. It kind of depends on DeMarco Murray's status. I don't think that DeMarco Murray is going to play again. I think that was a 4-6 week injury. But the matchup is very good. The Patriots, the linebackers that they use the most are Kyle Van Noy and Alandon Roberts, who finished 75th and 78th among 90 linebackers in Pro Football Focus's run defense grades. In his career, Derrick Henry, his yards per carry average jumps from 3.97 to 4.79 in games where he handles 10 or more carries. In the Foxborough cold, I think that you have to fire up Derrick Henry for a high-volume game. At least that needs to be your game plan if you are the Titans. Marcus Mariota has thrown for 205 yards or fewer in five of his last seven games. Where he has become more of a factor is with his legs, because in his first 14 starts, he averaged 3.6 scrambles per game. In his last two games, he's got 10 and 8 scrambles. Titans are running a lot more read option than they did earlier in the year. That has helped the running game at times. Historically, the Patriots' strategy when facing dual-threat quarterbacks is to mush rush them. They've used this tactic against Tyrod Taylor, against Russell Wilson, against Cam Newton. It's had mixed results. I mean, some of these quarterbacks have had big rushing games against them. Cam certainly did. He had 8 carries for 44 yards and a touchdown against the Patriots earlier in the year. Deshaun Watson had 8 carries for 41 yards against the Patriots. I think that ultimately this game, or the quarterback production, is going to come down to what can Marcus Mariota do with his legs, and will he execute in the red zone? Those were things that Marcus Mariota was able to do last week, and therefore he had a productive game and was low owned in daily fantasy and paid dividends at his price and at his ownership percentage. In the pass catcher core, Delanie Walker is a bet on volume play against the Patriots. The Patriots allowed the 10th fewest receiving yards to tight ends this year. But Delanie Walker has 60 plus yards and or touchdown in 8 of his last 11 games. He's going to continue to be the favorite to lead the Titans in receiving each week going forward. Eric Decker, we talked about him last week, how he was going to be the best value play on the wild card slate. He paid off just by scoring a touchdown. His price really didn't move, which I like to see. And he gets another good matchup. You go back and look at slot receivers. So Eric Decker's playing the slot between Rishard Matthews and Corey Davis. You go back and look at slot receivers that have faced the Patriots lately. Jermaine Kearse had a relatively good game for him in Week 17, despite horrible quarterback play, 5 catches for 59. In Week 15, Juju Smith-Schuster exploded for 6 for 114. Eli Rogers also scored a touchdown. Those guys primarily play in the slot. And then Week 14, Jarvis Landry had 8 catches for 46 yards and 2 touchdowns. Eric Decker has been productive lately. He has 55-plus yards and or a touchdown in 4 of his last 5 games. And I think that he is, again, one of the premier value wide receiver plays on this slate from a DFS standpoint. I wish that Rishard Matthews had done more lately. I really like him as a player. I just don't know about his health at this point. Since returning from a hamstring injury in Week 14, he's gone over 50 yards once in 5 games. His target totals in his last 3 are 4, 2, and 2. I think that we will see Stephon Gilmore against Corey Davis in this game with Malcolm Butler on Rishard Matthews. I think that Rishard Matthews has a slightly better matchup. I don't think that either guy has a great matchup. Corey Davis has teased throughout the course of the year, but he has cleared 50 yards in just 2 of 12 games, and he's still scoreless on the season. So I think that this is a Derrick Henry, Mariota, Delanie Walker, Eric Decker situation again, and the Rishard Matthews and Corey Davis are super contrarian, low probability plays that look. I mean, they could hit. The Titans are in a situation where it looks like they are likely to play from behind and perhaps have elevated pass volume. But I think that in order to really stay competitive in this game, they need to feed the ball to Derrick Henry. We can move on to the next one.
Well, before we move on to the next one, everyone needs to know why we're doing this. And there's a bunch of different reasons why we're doing it, including the ability to continue to play one-week fantasy football at DraftKings. The fantasy football season does not stop until the games do, which is why it's not too late to draft a new team and win money doing so. At DraftKings, so many ways to play. They got public contests with the huge cash prizes, or private contests where you compete against your friends, beginner, casual. They got all kinds of stuff. Just ask Travis from Los Angeles. He turned a $3 entry into $1,000. Gary from Houston, $3 entry into $50,000. Use the code FEAST at DraftKings.com to play free with your first deposit for your share of hundreds of thousands of dollars in total prizes this Sunday. But hurry, because this Sunday will be here before you know it. So get to DraftKings.com now. Choose your lineup. You can play for serious cash this week. That's code FEAST only at DraftKings.com. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligible restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. 1 o'clock, I will be there again on Sunday, Evan. It's the Jags. It's the Steelers. What do you got?
We go back, and these teams played in week five, and the Steelers did something that was just unthinkable at the time, based on everything we knew about those teams in the first 4 weeks of the season. I mean, hey, you know, it's a small sample, but it's still 25% of the season. The Steelers had Ben Roethlisberger drop back to pass 57 times and gave the ball to Le'Veon Bell on the ground 15 times. And that was when the Jaguars had like one of the worst rated run defenses in the NFL. Now, the Jaguars have become much better in run defense, especially in the second half of the season. They added Marcell Dareus. They just got some things figured out under a new coordinator, and they're not a great matchup. But I think that still, like, this is a game where – I think they need to give the ball to Le'Veon Bell as much as they possibly can, and to use him in the receiving game as well, because obviously he's excellent in that area. And in weeks 16 through 18, you know, I call week 18, that's the wild card round. The Jaguars gave up a bunch of receiving production to backs. In week 16, they allowed 5 catches for 76 yards to Kyle Juszczyk, the 49ers fullback. He was making plays downfield in that game. In week 17, they gave up a 66-yard screen pass touchdown to Derrick Henry. And then last week, the Bills running backs had 7 catches for 54 yards. Le'Veon Bell sat out the last 2 weeks. I mean, he took off week 17, and he took off the wild card round because the Steelers obviously earned the first round bye. His leg should be fresh, and he finished strong. I mean, Le'Veon Bell averaged only 3.8 yards per carry in the first 10 games of the season. Over the final six, I'm sorry, the final five, because he rested in week 17, he averaged 4.55 yards per carry. So much better efficiency late in the season. I expect to see an explosive Le'Veon Bell in week 19. The Jaguars' strength all season, of course, was against the pass. I mean, they have historically one of the best pass defenses of all time. There are some reasons for optimism, I think, on Ben Roethlisberger. The first is the fact that the Steelers were so good offensively at home this year. They averaged 28.3 points per game at Heinz Field, only 22.5 points per game on the road. They scored fewer than 20 points in Pittsburgh just once all year. That game, of course, was week 5 against these same Jags. Roethlisberger finished the season in white-hot form. I thought that he did not play particularly well in the first 9 games. Over the final 7, he completed 67.1% of his throws with an 18-5 touchdown to interception ratio, averaged 313 yards per game, threw multiple touchdown passes in all 7 of those games. And, of course, Antonio Brown coming back this week. You know, with Antonio Brown, He ripped up the Jaguars. They played him in almost all zone coverage in week five. He ripped them up, 10 catches for 157. He schooled Jalen Ramsey for a 49-yard gain. I mean, he's the best receiver in football. He's coming back from a multiple-week calf tear. All the reports on him have been positive. He's expected to be a full-time player. You know what you're getting into with Antonio Brown. He's the greatest receiver of of the post-Jerry Rice generation, and he's coming off a significant injury, and he's facing even though he won the matchup last time, in theory, although the Jaguars stomped the Steelers in that game, he does have a tough matchup. One other note on Antonio Brown: has scored 41 of 59 career touchdowns in home games, 70%. This year, stayed in line with that, 67% of his 9 touchdowns, 6 of 9 touchdowns were scored at home in 2017. Juju Smith-Schuster had 4 catches for 58 yards when these teams met in week 5. He ran almost all of his routes in the slot in that game. I think we'll see him in the slot again this year. We have made the mistake at times of trying to attack the Jaguars in the slot, thinking that would be a good place to go after them. That never turned out well. So Juju has a very difficult matchup. Only 7 wide receivers all season were able to clear 60 yards against the Jags. We're through 17 games now of the Jags doing this kind of stuff. You know what you're getting into with Juju. He's a good player. I think he has a really bright future. He's got a good quarterback, but his usage is going to be slightly de-emphasized with Antonio Brown back, and he has one of the worst possible matchups for a wide receiver, Martavis Bryant. So if you go back and look at the previous 4 games where Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown played, and Martavis Bryant played, Martavis Bryant only drew 2, 5, 4, and 6 targets in those games. If you go back and look at the 4 games where that applied to Juju Smith-Schuster, Juju had 10, 7, 8, and 5 targets in those 4 games. So it's real clear that Juju Smith-Schuster is the superior bet for volume between those two. When these teams met in week 5, Martavis Bryant had 21 yards on 8 targets. He did play better down the stretch, but I don't think he's going to win against the Jaguars in this game. He would be a low probability, probably touchdown dependent dart throw in daily fantasy. Very, very contrarian sort of play. Low probability of hitting, I would say. Jesse James and Vance McDonald, they're going to share time in this one. Jags were also great against tight ends throughout the season. They erased Delanie Walker. They erased Jack Doyle. Last week, Charles Clay was one of the most popular plays on the slate. He did nothing. Jimmy Graham had zeros against the Jags late in the season. On the other side, I think Blake Bortles' confidence is back in the gutter. He had a nice run against a bunch of weak defenses. He's missing wide-open checkdowns last week. I mean, that was an abysmal passing performance by Blake Bortles. He was able to kind of keep things going keep the chains moving with a career-high 10 rushing attempts for 88 yards. The Steelers allowed the 5th fewest quarterback rushing yards this season. However, the Bills allowed the fewest rushing yards to quarterbacks in the season, and we just saw what Blake Bortles did against them. I think that Blake Bortles ultimately, his production is going to come down to, I mean, unless he just all of a sudden it clicks for him as a passer, which is hard to, fathom. I mean, not impossible, but difficult to fathom based on what we just saw. It's going to come down to rushing production and ability to execute in the red zone. And that's the case for a lot of quarterbacks on this slate. or for at least for Marcus Mariota and for Blake Bortles. Obviously, Marcus Mariota would be a more confident play because he has outplayed Blake Bortles recently. But Blake Bortles, he feels like a train wreck at this point, and I think that the Jags are going to have to go back to Leonard Fournette, even though Leonard Fournette hasn't been particularly productive lately. I mean, in his first six, he's played 14 games this season. He missed some time with injuries. He averaged 4.6 yards per carry with 7 touchdowns in the first 6 games. Over his last 8, 3.15 yards per carry with only 3 touchdowns. I expected him to kind of pop back up for a bigger game last week in a much better spot last week against the Bills. He did not, but the things that you can hang your hat on with Leonard Fournette this week, and I mean, you have to worry about like the Jaguars falling behind and you know, and that, but you can hang your hat on the fact that Leonard Fournette's usage is way, way up. 86% and 87% of the snaps in his last 2 games, 23 and 24 touches, 5 targets in each game. So really, even if they do fall behind, he is likely going to remain on the field. They have committed to him in their last 2 games as a sort of Le'Veon Bell type of usage. Not quite that much, but I mean, in that sort of realm. And the Steelers struggled in run defense badly after losing Ryan Shazier. In their final 4 non-Week 17 games, they gave up 5.7 yards per carry and 5 rushing touchdowns to RBs. So I think that Leonard Fournette is a guy who's going to have low ownership on this DFS slate. He's got a good matchup, and he's got the volume. And those are very strong indicators, despite the fact that the game just doesn't look like it sets up that well for Leonard Fournette on the road against the Steelers, who are big home favorites. So the Jags went with a 4-way wideout rotation last week with Marquise Lee back. This is always frustrating. No one played more than 60% of the snaps. No one played more than 50%, fewer than 50% of the snaps. It was Marquise Lee and Dede Westbrook. They both played 59%. Keelan Cole played 54%. Allen Hurns played 51%. Allen Hurns, Keelan Cole, and Marquise Lee each saw 1 target. Dede Westbrook saw 8. Blake Bortles, of course, threw for 87 yards, so none of them did well. But I think that this is a better matchup. I mean, the Bills had one of the best pass defenses in football in 2017. The Steelers fell apart down the stretch, gave up massive wide receiver production in their final 9 games. And you can read my matchups column on Thursday to see all those different players. But the matchup is good for the Jaguars receivers in theory. Of course, whether Blake Bortles is able to deliver them the rock is going to be the biggest obstacle. But I think that Dede Westbrook, after seeing those 8 targets last week, I think that he becomes a very interesting tournament play in daily fantasy on this slate. He also runs 83% of his routes on the perimeter. And if you look at the wide receivers that hurt the Steelers the most in the second half of the season, almost all of them were perimeter wide receivers. We can move on to the next one.
The next one's the last one. I think it's the best game of the slate. I cannot wait for it. It is the Vikings hosting the Saints.
Yeah, so I'm kind of down on the Saints in this spot, and I was very, very high on them last week. I mean, we were very on to Drew Brees. We were very on to Michael Thomas. He was chalk, but we're very on to him. Very on to Ted Ginn. Wish I would have been more on to Josh Hill, but I think that this is going to be a very much, much tougher matchup for Drew Brees than what he drew last week. I mean, the Panthers were showing a ton of signs of being able to get burned in the passing game leading into that game. The Vikings pretty much weren't burned in the passing game all season. They allowed the fewest touchdown passes in the league, 13 touchdown passes in 16 games. They allowed the fewest yards per pass attempt in the NFC at 5.5. Their 8 games at home, the Vikings allowed in their 8 games at home, the Vikings allowed 8 offensive touchdowns. I mean, this is, you know, there was a time in about November or early December when I said, would have said hands down that the Jaguars had the best defense in the NFL. But I would say at this point that it is neck and neck between the Jaguars and the Vikings. And I may even, you know, just because the Jags are on the road this week and the Vikings are at home, I would give the edge to the Vikings. I think that this is the toughest matchup that any quarterback, I think that any offensive skill position player is going to face on this slate. And Drew Brees is going to have to get it done without Andrews Pete, who fractured his fibula last week. So the Saints are going to have to dig back into their depth on the offensive line. They do have good depth on the offensive line. Simeo Kelemete has a bunch of starts under his belt, and I think that there may not even be any drop-off, but I thought that that was worth noting. The Vikings were similarly awesome on the ground. In their final 3 games, they held opposing RBs to 2.76 yards per carry. They allowed the third fewest receiving yards to running backs in the NFL. So that leaves Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram as fade matchup, bet on talent, DFS plays. I think the lean has clearly been to Alvin Kamara lately. Alvin Kamara outsnapped Mark Ingram in 2 of the Saints' last 3 games. Last week, despite the fact that the Saints had a lead in that game against the Panthers, Alvin Kamara had more touches than Mark Ingram, and he logged his second highest snap rate of the season at 64%. So I think that, you know, if you ask Sean Payton, he might not admit it, but I think that they are starting to lean this backfield in Alvin Kamara's direction. In the regular season, Alvin Kamara tied Le'Veon Bell for the NFL Running Back League in red zone targets, and he has scored a touchdown in 8 of his last 10 games in which he was not concussed. So he started to get more red zone scoring position carries recently as well. Chris Raybon did a great job of pointing that out. Chris Raybon of 4for4 Football, need to have him on the show at some point this offseason. In the pass catcher core, we're going to get Xavier Rhodes on Michael Thomas. The Vikings allowed 6 touchdowns to wide receivers in their last 13 games. Just not a lot of production allowed to wideouts. The only 2 touchdowns that Xavier Rhodes gave up all season were to Marvin Jones on Thanksgiving, which, of course, everybody saw that game. And so, you know, they thought that, ooh, Xavier Rhodes is overrated. Well, Marvin Jones just had a great game in that particular game. Xavier Rhodes didn't even have poor coverage on Marvin Jones' big plays. I think this is going to be a very difficult matchup for Michael Thomas, who was the best wide receiver on last week's slate. He may be one of the worst wide receiver plays, considering his likely ownership, considering his price, considering everything involved. I think it's going to be a very difficult matchup for him. In week 1, these teams played, by the way, Michael Thomas had 5 catches for 45 on 8 targets, despite not being shadowed in that game by Xavier Rhodes. I think absolutely he'll be shadowed by Xavier Rhodes this time around. Ted Ginn is going to get more of Trey Waynes, but Trey Waynes deserves credit. He was a guy that we successfully picked on early in the season. He was not a guy that you wanted to pick on from about the middle of October on, and from week 10 on, he allowed 0 touchdowns. So, look, Ted Ginn is going to get low volume. He can run, and it's possible that he breaks a big play on the turf at U.S. Bank Stadium, but this is not a defense that gave up big plays. I mean, the Vikings allowed the fewest 20-plus yard completions in the NFL this year and the fifth fewest 40-plus yard completions. Brandon Coleman was the Saints slot receiver over Willie Snead last week, played 50% of the snaps, drew five targets, four catches for 44. Brandon Coleman has been an underachiever, I guess would be one way to put it. Another could be that he's just not that great. But he's 6'6". So he is someone that I think merits discussion against the Vikings. The Vikings usually on passing downs, they use Mackenzie Alexander in the slot. Brandon Coleman plays about 70% of his snaps in the slot. Mackenzie Alexander is 5'10", 190. Terrence Newman has been their base package slot corner. So I think that Brandon Coleman is just kind of worth mentioning from a size, from a decent usage standpoint for the divisional round. I'm going to play him in a few lineups in Daily Fantasy this week. Josh Hill feels chasey to me. He did have a very good game in the wild card round, except he only saw four targets, only ran 19 routes. Vikings allowed the third fewest yards to tight ends this season. Now, I think that the Vikings side is really, really interesting here against the Saints. I think that the let's start with the Vikings running game, because if they are able to gain a lead and maintain that lead, Latavius Murray, I think, has a chance to have like over 20 carries. He did have over 20 carries in each of the Vikings' final three games, and he had 19 or more touches in five of the final 6 weeks. Latavius Murray ranked fourth in the NFL in red zone carries, six in carries inside the 10, fifth in runs inside the five. Saints allowed 100-plus rushing yards in six of their last nine games. If he is able to get a lead, or if the Vikings are able to get and maintain a lead, Latavius Murray should be fed. Jerick McKinnon becomes the play if the Vikings fall behind. The Saints were highly vulnerable to receiving backs during the season, and last week gave up 6-for-101 and a touchdown to Christian McCaffrey. I think that the way that Case Keenum matches up against the Saints defense, I think, is very favorable for Case Keenum. Case Keenum was one of the NFL's best downfield passers this season. He finished 12th among quarterbacks in 20-plus yards completions, despite finishing 17th in pass attempts. He was 11th in percentage of passes attempted 20-plus yards downfield. Definitely willing to pull the trigger. Saints gave up the third most completions of 20-plus yards this year, and they were giving up big plays to the Panthers last week as well. Case Keenum was 15th among quarterbacks in rushing yards. Saints gave up the fourth most rushing yards to quarterbacks this year, and then gave up about 40 yards to Cam Newton last week. The best matchup in the passing game is going to go to Adam Thielen against the Saints. Thielen's slot usage rose late in the season. That's where you hurt the Saints, who lost Kenny Vaccaro to injured reserve. Stephon Diggs, I think that there are some reasons to be optimistic about him. The Saints' vulnerability to big passing plays is first and foremost. But Stephon Diggs had huge road-home splits this year, averaged over 80 yards in a touchdown per game at home. And then Kyle Rudolph facing this Saints defense that got really hurt by Greg Olsen last week. Kyle Rudolph's numbers late in the year don't look great because he was battling an ankle injury. He should be fully recovered from that after the first round bye, and I think he's going to have really light ownership in daily fantasy. He led the Vikings in receptions and targets inside the 10-yard line. I think he has the highest touchdown probability in the Vikings pass catcher corps.
Evan, once again, you outdid yourself, and I know you said we're going to be a little bit abbreviated. Not really, man. We dominated. It was awesome. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Check out Evan on Twitter, at Evan Silva. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL, and that's also my Instagram deal also, or facebook.com/Ross Tucker NFL. We cannot tell you how much we appreciate it when you guys give us a retweet on Twitter or a like on Facebook. It's huge. It's basically your way of telling your friends, your family, whatever, that you appreciate what we bring to the table, mainly what Evan brings to the table. Let's be honest. We, of course, will keep it rolling all year round. That includes next week with an epic breakdown of the conference championship games and more. Then we'll start to get into some guests and all kinds of awesome things as we keep it rolling here on the Fantasy Feast Eating Podcast. You can also check out the Even Money Podcast today. Those of you that are into Dynasty Leagues, the College Draft Podcast is breaking down all of the college players. And, of course, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Other than that, I am totally stuffed. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the True Car price, the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for that same car you want. And your certified dealer knows this. So they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.